Friends, in this post-Easter season, I propose that in the services for a few weeks, we might consider some humble petitions that people who were living in Jesus' day might have offered as they struggled with the issues they were left to face after the crucifixion. I'm thinking of those who believed that Jesus was the Messiah, but who struggled now because the Lord had been put to death. And what did this mean? And what could they expect would happen next? The crucifixion, of course, was very real for them. But the resurrection needed to be confirmed. Their spiritual journey is, in a way, you know, like ours, because we too must go through that process in some way in our journey of faith. And so, petitions that they might have offered, as we think about their circumstances, fit us also. You see, they were not prepared to live with uncertainty. They wanted confirmation. And of course, so must we desire confirmation of the things we profess. For if we really desire a vital faith, it has to be based on something more than maybe or perhaps. For this is what we believe. And so this question, alive, can I really believe it? Because, you see, on that third day, the story of Christ's resurrection began rather slowly and at first only to a small group of people, began to spread the word that Christ was alive. And to help us think about that, I want this morning to compare three different reactions. In some cases, of course, we're told just that the news spread, and we're not given a lot of detail about how people received it or what they thought about it when they first heard it. But I want to sort of look at and compare and contrast three instances in the scriptures where there is a reaction recorded. And I begin with that account in Luke on the night of the resurrection, as some people were traveling to the village of Emmaus, feeling very sad, feeling distressed because hopes and dreams had been shattered, so it seemed, and they were trying to decide what to make of it all. And a stranger joined them on the way. Now, these individuals on the way to Emmaus were people who had, you see, come to believe that Christ was indeed the promised Messiah. What they couldn't fit into the picture was the fact that he had been crucified, because that seemed to end all their expectations concerning him. And this stranger that they met, who professed not to know what was going on and allowed them to explain it all to him, then began to open for them the scriptures of the Old Testament and point out to them in all the various ways in which there were there indications that these things that they were experiencing had in fact been anticipated, and were even more so things that were appropriate, if you will, for the Lord's Messiah to experience, and even how it was necessary that these things should happen. And there they are, struggling. And they still, in hearing the explanations, though enlightened, didn't yet understand who was instructing them. Only when they reached their destination in Emmaus and they invited the stranger to join them and spend the night, only then, as they sat together at table and Jesus took the loaf and broke it, gave thanks, only then were their eyes opened to recognize who it was that had accompanied them on their journey. And he vanished from their midst. And Luke records how they quickly gathered things together and rushed back to Jerusalem to share their experience, only to arrive in Jerusalem and find out that the news was there also, that there was word that others had seen the risen Lord. It was a struggle for them, because for them, in their particular circumstances, the issue was, how can you get past crucifixion? I mean, if Christ has been crucified, doesn't that end everything that we anticipated concerning him? And now they have opened for them the option of resurrection. Not only has it been opened for them, but it has been verified for them, because they have seen the Lord and recognized him in their midst. Theirs was, you see, a struggle of faith, in that they needed to understand how the things that they believed fit with what was happening. Or, perhaps more precisely, how what was happening fit with what they believed. And that was their journey from dismay and sorrow to victory and triumph in Christ. Now, that's one. So keep that one in mind. Another one, rather famous, well known. In fact, well enough known that it got the individual concerned hung with a label that probably pursued him for the rest of his days. And that relates to events that happened just after these things on the road to Emmaus. It's the story of Thomas. We aren't reading it this morning in its detail, but you know the basics of it. Jesus appeared to the disciples, but Thomas wasn't present. And when Thomas arrived afterwards and was told that they had seen the risen Lord, he protested that he couldn't believe until he saw for himself. In fact, he was quite graphic in the way that he described what he wanted to see. He wanted to see the wounds. He wanted to be assured that this really was the one who was crucified, who was alive. If you're saying he's alive, I want to see it for myself. We're kind of hard on Thomas. But you know, had we been there, he was asking reasonable questions. How do you confirm that this visage that you see and understand to be the Christ is really the one who was crucified? And so Thomas had that struggle with the physical details of it all. And as I say, as a consequence, he, in subsequent generations, is sometimes labeled the doubter. But always remember when you hear that he came through that journey to faith. Because while he may have hesitated, while he may have made demands, of course, if we had read the whole story, we would know that, as you know, that Jesus appeared again to the 12. And actually, it was kind of hard on Thomas, because Thomas was willing to shrug it off at that point and say, I believe, and Jesus is there saying, no, you wanted to see? Look. Be certain. Have it confirmed. Don't have any hesitation about this. You need to be certain about this. And so that was a second response to the resurrection. Thomas, who went through a struggle about the physical details of it, and who came out on the side of faith. Now the third story is kind of a very brief one. And the third appearance of Christ, the risen Christ that I referred to this morning specifically, was the appearance to Mary of Magdala outside the tomb on the morning of the resurrection. We actually read that passage from John 20 last week. And Mary Magdalene, Mary of Magdala, in part to differentiate her from Mary, the mother of Jesus, in the events surrounding the crucifixion and resurrection, Mary of Magdala went to the tomb early in the morning. And she found it empty. And she went outside, and there was someone standing there, but in her sorrow and weeping, she presumed it was just the gardener. And in fact, asked of him, since Christ's body wasn't in the tomb, where he had taken it. And then Jesus spoke to her, spoke her name. And in the very speaking of her name, she recognized the Lord. It was that personal moment of reflection and a transforming moment for Mary of Magdala, because she went from the garden outside the tomb and returned to her fellow followers of Jesus Christ, and without hesitation affirmed for them that she had seen the Lord and that he was risen from the dead. But for her, the bond, that moment of recognition and acceptance, was just in the personal speaking of her name. Now, each of the individuals in that first generation of believers somehow came to believe the testimony of those who had seen for themselves And of course, as Paul points out, many that aren't particularly individually documented also witnessed the risen Lord. But it was crucial for them to come to a point of conviction concerning the truth of the resurrection. And so I placed on their lips the petition, "Alive? Can I really believe it?" And each of them made that journey, as we make it also. And for them it was crucial, because they had to know before they could really go on whether this was so, as do we need to be satisfied that the one who was crucified is alive. This is part of our Easter experience, that we not only hear the testimony as to what happened, but that we absorb it and affirm it. It strikes me that when people talk about death these days, they skip over something. I mean, people, not everyone, of course, but people on a broad level kind of believe in heaven. Somehow, whether that's based on a distinctive faith commitment or just, well, it's a nice thought. But how do you get there from death? Death's pretty real. How do you get to heaven? How does it all fit together? And of course, the bridge, the link, the connection is resurrection. Now, our world somehow embraces heaven, but doesn't always go back and look at what makes heaven possible as an experience for those who have died. But the scriptures make it very clear that as Christ died and rose triumphant, that he also opened a way of life eternal for his people. And so it becomes critical to us that we see the connection clearly, and that we understand it, and that our faith is based on more than, well, maybe, or perhaps, but, that though distantly removed in the historical chain of events from those original circumstances, we become persuaded and affirm that the Christ who was crucified was raised from the dead on the third day, and that because he lives, we may live also. Rejoice, celebrate it, spread the good news, and don't hesitate to talk about resurrection, because it is the thing that gives it all the sense that God intends it to have for us. This is good news. Thanks be to God.